Hi, everybody. Yes, this is One in Messiah, and yes, it's actually me. A lot different, as you can see, than usual. Since we are not able to use the church tonight because of a memorial service for Pastor Phil, and Joan and I are on the road on the banks of the Mississippi River right near Cape Girardeau, Missouri. We're going to start heading home tomorrow. We've been in the Ozarks the last few days, which has been kind of nice, but a lot of driving. But anyway, so that's why what you see behind me is part of a hotel that I have. But at least it's working. So at least it's working, and we can do One in Messiah because I don't want to miss it. So, and I promise it'll be a shorter ching. I can hear the sigh of relief already. So I'm going to try to keep it in, 20 to 25 minutes, I hope. So we're going to start, as usual, with the Shema, because the Shema is what separated the chosen people from everyone else, from all the other people, because they had the knowledge of the true God, and they had a covenant with the true God, as opposed to their as opposed to all the other Gentiles, which, of course, were pagans and had hundreds of gods. So we start, as always, with the Shema in Hebrew and then in English. Shema Israel Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Baruch Shem Kavod Malkuto Leolam Vayed. To be the name of his glorious kingdom forever and ever. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And these words which I command you today shall be upon your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children, and speak of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign upon your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. And you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and upon your gates. Amen. So, for this Shabbat teaching, we're actually going to go to a New Testament passage. Because the last 3 weeks we talked about Elijah. We talked about Elijah confronting the world religion. And he confronted it with King Ahab, who was basically the source of the idolatry that had gripped the northern kingdom because of his wife Jezebel, who was basically a pagan priestess. And then in the second part of that, so courageous Elijah went because God told him to go to Ahab. And then the week that we did his amazing Mount Carmel experience, where the fire came down and burned everything up, and the prophets and priests of Baal were executed. Then last week we talked about human Elijah, who ran away, and God found him, said, "Where are you? What are you doing here, Elijah?" And then sends him out to do two more incredibly important missions, one of which had to do with judgment on the northern kingdom from the Assyrians, and the other had to do with commissioning the prophet Elisha. So, since Elijah was a disciple in the sense that he had learned about God and went to do what God had asked him to do, we know in the New Testament there are more examples of discipleship. And discipleship is a word you don't hear much anymore in the, quote, modern church, unquote. Because what you have now is, you have this feel-good Christianity, I love Jesus, he loves me, and we have some good music, then we all leave happy, and everybody's giggly and fun. And nobody talks about discipleship. And disciple, of course, has the same root as discipline, and it has to do with learning. A disciple is someone who learns. You know, if you love Jesus, you want to learn about him. You want to learn about why he came, what he did when he came, how salvation came through that, what he's doing now in the kingdom and what our mission is to expand them and to bring people into the kingdom. So we're going to go to Luke 14. And, of course, we're going to be talking a lot more about this. When next week, by the way, we're going to get back to normal. We'll be at New Life Fellowship, 5994 Ridge Road. So those of you in the Cleveland area, please come. So Luke 14, verse 25. Now great with him, and he turned and said to them, "If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and his mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." This is a difficult passage, because what he's saying is he's making sure that people who want to follow him understand what they're in for. You know, in another book, which we've done at one of Messiah before, you know, he says, the one guy says, "Well, I got to bury my father." And he goes, "Well, then let the dead bury the dead." The other guy says, "Well, I got to go home and say goodbye to everybody." And he says, "Well, then you're not worthy of the kingdom." And these are difficult passages, but he wants to make sure that people understand him is not just about good music and a pleasant worship space and having a mega church and then after eating kind of going out to brunch and talking about how awesome everybody is. When this passage is given, when he does this teaching, he's on his way to Jerusalem. And so these multitudes of people are with him and want to hear what they have to say. Why were they there? Well, you know, everybody's in it for different reasons. You know, any church you go to, any gathering you go to, even down to Bible studies, prayer meetings, home groups, and that sort of thing, which I'm sure you guys all do, we all do. There's always people at different levels. There's always people with different anxieties. There's always people with different reasons why they've come. You know, is he going to do another miracle today? How does he do that? Is this like some kind of magic show? Then another group, "Wow, you know, we've never seen power like this, and we've never seen anybody talk like this. Could this be the Messiah? Could this be the Mashiach that we've been waiting for all these centuries?" But he's asking, do you have the zeal to follow me? Do you have the zeal? Is it more important for you to be comfortable and to look nice and to get your rest and eat your healthy diet? Or is it more important to have the zeal to follow the kingdom and to do what the kingdom ask you to do, what he, the king, may be telling you that you need to do? So there were different people in this multitude. And what he's saying is, if you want to be my disciple, you have to be ready to give up what's dear and comfortable and familiar. And there's, you know, some examples we can think of right off the bat. One of them is Abraham. You know, Abraham was living a pretty cushy life when he was living in Ur. And he was an old guy. He was wealthy. His father had a lot of money. He had all kind of livestock. He had money. He was already like 75. He had already been on Social Security for 10 years. He had all kind of pension funds that he was living on. He probably had a really nice house and a nice tent. And he was living the good life. But God called him to go to a land that God was going to show him, to go to a land that he didn't even know. And he went. He left what was comfortable, left his country, and he went. Moses left Egypt. He had grown up in Pharaoh's court. But he left Egypt. We're not going to go through all the reasons. But he left what was comfortable, and he worked 40 more years in the wilderness as a shepherd before he went back to deliver the people. Paul, Saul of Tarsus, was at the temple for at least a couple of decades, studying, learning, teaching, just constantly, totally absorbed into the law. totally absorbed into the teaching of the ancient rabbis and the current rabbis of the time. But when he came to know Yeshua, Jesus, as his Messiah, he left the temple. He didn't go back to the temple anymore. He left what was comfortable to him. And you probably know people from your church, from your groups, who have done mission work, who have gone to other places in the world to be evangelists. It's not always easy. It's usually very difficult. They leave their comfortable house. They go to some place. They don't know what dangers they're going to face. They don't know how they're going to be received. They don't know if they're going to make an impact, but they go. And a good modern example that I always like to use is Jews for Jesus. I mean, of all the Messianic Jews there are in the world, Jews for Jesus is the only group that everybody kind of knows about. You know, these are young people, leave their families, leave their comfortable surroundings to go and preach, mostly to Jews, but to Gentiles too. But they have an impact in every city in the world where there are more than 25,000 Jews living. They have been there. And for the last several years, they've been intensely evangelizing in the land of Israel itself. You're disowned by their families. And when you're disowned by your family and you're a young guy who's, you know, say 20, 18, 25, you feel bad. Your parents count you as being dead and they have a funeral for you. But before that, they call you a traitor. They say you've betrayed your fathers. You've betrayed your culture. But as true disciples, most of them, I don't know what percentage, I'm sure it's not 100%, but almost all of them say, I'm really sad that my parents don't want to see me anymore, but now that I know the truth, that's more important to me than my parents are. And this is what Jesus is getting to. He's using a very common Hebrew form of literature called hyperbolic speech. If I'd call it literature, but whatever it is. Speech. It's hyperbolic speech. It's an exaggeration to make a point. Just like if you listen to the radio show recently, I've been teaching about parables and what parables are and why Jesus used them. And the hyperbolic speech makes a point. He doesn't want you to hate your father and your mother. He doesn't want you to hate your spouse and your children. He doesn't want you to hate your brothers and your sisters. But what he does want you to know is that you have to love him more than those people. Those people, although everybody loves their family and everybody will do whatever they have to do for their family, compared to loving Jesus, family is second. And he makes that point. And that's the point of his hyperbolic speech. You have to love all those people less than you love him. He has to have the preference. Your family can disown you. But it's better, like in the example of Jews for Jesus, it's better to lose their favor than his favor. If you say, well, you know, my father and mother don't really like it if I go to church, and they don't really like it if I do, and I'm just making up an example, then what will you hear at the end? Oh, it's great that you didn't come to me because your father and mother told you not to. You're going to hear, I don't even know who you are. So it's better to lose the favor of your family than to lose his favor. It's better to lose your own life than to lose his favor. He makes a great another hyperbolic example. You know, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. Now, does he really want you to take your eye out, cut your hand off? Of course not. But what he's saying, if these things cause you to sin and you lose my favor and you don't come into the kingdom, you're going to be thrown into hell, thrown into the judgment with your body intact. It would be better to not have your body intact and not be thrown into the judgment. So I don't want to go into all that, but that's basically hyperbolic speech. And when we look through all of Christian history, well, even before that, because, you know, most of the prophets were martyred. When we look through, and it's not just early Christian history, as everybody thinks, because there were more prophets in the, more martyrs in the 20th century than all the other centuries combined. And that rate is continuing in the 21st century, which is now already a fifth over. So, martyrs bear all that. People bear all that because they can see the goal. And nothing is as important. Nothing's more important. You know, Paul talks about how an athlete, you know, he was in Greece, and, you know, Greece had the Olympic Games. Olympic Games. Everybody knows about that. They also had what were called the Isthmus Games, where if you lived around Corinth, you took the Isthmus Games. So all the people around there, you know, I don't remember what it was once a year or once every other year, you know, they went to all these athletic contests. So, you know, Paul was living there for a long time. He was at Corinth for 18 months, and he was in Thessaloniki and Philippi, and, you know, he got to know a lot about Greeks. I don't think they made moussaka then, but I would have loved to have been there eating that. But anyway, Paul probably wouldn't have eaten it anyway. But anyway, all kidding aside, he watched athletes train. And he makes a point in the scripture where he says, you know, these athletes train for years to win a contest. And what they win is a crown of laurel leaves, which he calls a perishable crown. Because after a few days, the leaves all wither up. Your crown's all icky looking. And another few days, your crown's pretty much all wrinkled up brown leaves. He says, shouldn't you strive to go to an imperishable crown? Shouldn't you train for an imperishable crown? Shouldn't you be a disciple for an imperishable crown? So Jesus is using this hyperbolic speech just so people are understanding of how important this is. After all, if you think your parents are more important than Jesus, then you're upside down. And he wants you to understand that. It doesn't mean that you neglect your parents. It doesn't mean that you don't like them. It doesn't mean you don't... But it's a matter of relative position. And he also wants to make the point in that passage that, you know, when things are peaceful and nice, there's usually no problem with following. Oh, yeah, I'm going every Sunday, going to the Bible study on Tuesday, and going to the home group on Thursday, and, yeah, I'm praying all the time, and going nice. My neighbors, you know, we're all there, nice. But when some problem comes, some tribulation comes, some persecution comes, it doesn't get so easy. So what he's telling the people, like he had told Elijah, is you have to stand for me regardless of what's going on around you. You know, what are you doing here? What are you doing here, Ralph? You know, what are you doing here, Peter, in the middle of this mess? You know, we have coronavirus. You know, you had people before coronavirus, oh, nothing more important to me than going to church. Well, coronavirus comes, nobody's thinking about that anymore because now they're worried about their own skin. Well, coronavirus is here. It's going to be here for a while. It's going to be gone. And then worse things are going to come. And like I said before, we're going to look back on this of the good old days of coronavirus because we've got war coming and persecution coming and famine coming and other diseases coming. But that's another teaching. So what Jesus is telling them, he comes right out and says, you have to bear your cross. There's going to be burdens involved. You know, Elijah had burdens involved because when he spoke to Baal, Queen Jezebel was upset. Because this was her God. These were her priests. This was her thing. She had talked Ahab into building temples to these false gods. So Ahab, you know, when the going got tough, Ahab took off. I'm sorry, Elijah took off. Ran all the way to the south of the country, to Beersheba, and hid. So what Jesus is saying 700 years later, 700 and some years later, is tribulation is going to come to you. Persecution is going to come to you. And you have to be ready for this. You have to carry the cross. It doesn't mean you're crucified physically. You may be. Many of our brothers and sisters have been in Africa and in the Middle East. But, you know, if you're living in Parma and you're carrying the cross, the chances of you being physically crucified are pretty slim. But it's a metaphor of all the other things that can come. And they all knew, you know, this audience that was listening to him knew about crosses. This was the form of execution. So when he says you have to pick up your cross and you have to follow me, well, that's interesting because condemned criminals carried their own crosses. As you see, Good Friday morning, what happened? But a condemned criminal carried his own cross. And if you're not ready to do that, he says, you're not worthy to be my disciple. Because you may have to do that. Because like Paul says, it's not I who live anymore, it's Christ who lives in me. Or as we say in a lot of churches, you know, I want less of me and more of him. And so he uses this type of speech to underline how important this is going to be. You know, we're ticking toward the end times. We're in the end time. We're in the end of the end time. And we're going ahead pretty fast now. Things are going to be happening much faster. Because remember, he said it's going to be like a woman in labor. You get a little contraction. This is a little contraction that we're having now. Then there's going to be bigger contractions. Then they're going to be more often. But we have to understand that to be his disciples, we have to carry these burdens. We have to be ready for execution, so to speak. Your name may be ruined for the sake of the gospel. You may lose your job because of the gospel. You may be disgraced in front of everybody that you know. You may be a laughingstock. And I should add, you know, joining a church doesn't make you a disciple. When somebody says, oh, sign here and we'll send you envelopes, that doesn't mean you're a disciple. And when you go there, you know, for the 57 minutes on Sunday morning, and then you leave, you're not necessarily a disciple. You know, somebody once used the example that we can all identify with, but, you know, when you're young and you fall in love with somebody, you want to know everything about that person. How they think, how they react to things, what they like, what they don't like. What's their favorite color? What do they like to eat? You know, does she want to ride in my junky car? In my case, Joan's over here laughing. That's another story. We'll talk about my car some other time. But, you know, when you fall in love with somebody, you want to know everything about them. So if you fall in love with Jesus, why don't you want to learn more about him? Why don't you want to devote your life to studying and meditating on these things? But he says you have to be ready because no matter what happens, it's going to be difficult to be a disciple. Joining a church does not make you a disciple. There are many disciples that don't belong to a church. Because he calls you to follow. There's so many great songs, you know, I can't think of any right now, but those are my favorite kind of songs. He calls you to follow. And when you follow, you have to keep your eyes on him. You know, Paul says, keep your eyes on the prize. You keep your eyes on him when you're pushing the plow or whatever kind of work he gives you to do. Because he's told you ahead of time what you have to do. He's told you ahead of time what the costs are going to be. So we have to consider these things. This isn't like a hobby. This isn't like something that you just do. This isn't something to kind of pass the time with. Remember, and as we always say, as I always like to say on Friday nights, Jesus didn't come to be kind of part of your life, to supplement your life in some way, to give you some positive thinking. He came to save you and to be your Lord. And so in this passage, and like I said, I promised we were going to keep it short, because I'm going to go back out and look at the Mississippi River when we're done and get something to eat. But anyway, and next week, of course, we'll be back at the church, 6:15 sharp. And, of course, it'll also be live streamed, probably at 6:45. But so this passage is important because these are some of the things that have been lost in our culture. Lost. Because we've made Jesus part of our life, like a lot of other things. Yep, I go to church, I go to the softball game, I go to the soccer game, I go meet the guys at the place. We go to the other thing, the good thing. Then Sunday morning we go to church. And we don't mind going, as long as it's not more than 57 minutes. Doesn't want to be part of your life. I love the old song from the Vineyard's music. Vineyard had such a huge impact on me and when I was a new believer in that, you know, it says, Jesus, be the center. You can Google that and I'm not saying it for you. Don't worry. But he wants to be the center. He doesn't want to be a part of your life. So we might continue with this again next week. I'm not sure yet, but we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for tuning in. And I'm glad we at least got to do this. And I'll process this eventually and put it on YouTube and on the podcast. So you can always watch it on Facebook too, I guess. So let's close with the Aaronic blessing. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May he lift his countenance before you and give you his peace. And we ask this in the name of the Prince of Peace, the Tsar Shalom, Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah. Amen.